This article is entitled Mental Health and the Church, written for us by Emmy Kegler, pastor of Grace Lutheran Church in Northeast Minneapolis. She subtitles it Reframing Sin and Mental Illness. Revealing a life with mental illness requires either a lot of trust or a lot of exhaustion or a combination of both. The symptoms and experiences of my own life with mental illness is complexified by faith. Belief is the favored Christian prescription for mental illness. Pills? Oh, heck no, just prayer. Anxiety? Well, just cast it on the Lord. Depression? Just leave it at the foot of the cross. After all, miracles happen every day. We would be wary of someone who encouraged their diabetic parent to give up the medications and the diet changes and to just cast their insulin needs on Christ alone. But faith persists as a prescription for mental illness even when we have stepped back from offering it for physical ailments. The church fails to specify exactly how and why faith will heal, and only that it will. But the moment we scratch the theological surface, we find a whole host of really bad theology and bad psychology masquerading as biblical truth. I in no way want to deride the importance of prayer, especially communal prayer, and the prayers that we offer up over mental health, our depression or anxiety, the other illnesses that besiege our minds and spirits are as hopeful and as helpful as the prayers we offer for every other physical disease that strikes us, from cancer to Alzheimer's to substance abuse. And the positivity makes a difference, sometimes even makes a miracle, but by and large, in medical experience, the positivity can help, but it cannot cure. The most effective treatment to date for the majority of mental illness appears to be a cocktail of chemical intervention, cognitive therapy, meditation or habit shifts, body engagement through exercise, nutritional changes, and so on. And yet, the church persists in prescribing only an increase of faith. We've relegated mental illness to categories of sin or a test of faith or demon possession. We have made it a weakness of the will that can be overcome by better personal devotion or a cause for physical and emotional abuse in the name of curing it. We have compounded the shame of depression, addiction, or delusion through ignorance and isolation. What if the church taught that toxic positivity and denying medical attention to those in distress was a sin? We have failed, too, to attend how systems of oppression, subjugation, and dehumanization have been direct contributors to compounded mental illness in individuals, communities, and even multiple generations. Women, people of color, LGBTQIA+ communities, disabled people, the poor, all experience specific kinds of mental illness at higher rates than their male, white, straight, able-bodied, financially stable counterparts. For a church commissioned by the Apostle Paul to confess that there is no longer Jew or Greek, no longer slave or free, and there's no longer male or female, for all of you are one in Christ. Should we not reject systems of hierarchy and oppression, which not only treat equal members of the body as unequal, but subject them to long-term illness because of it? Providers of mental health care in the secular sector have long acknowledged all of this. Our ability to experience love and acceptance or to pursue our passions and develop our talents is seriously hindered when our physical needs and sense of safety and stability are unmet or endangered. In contrast, too, often the Christian approach has been to ignore the rotten fruits of its own isms and phobias, perpetuating systemic traumas against marginalized populations, shaming and demonizing individuals at any level who experience symptoms of mental illness, while insisting that its approach is perfectly historical, literally biblical, theologically sound, and solely salvific. Seeking care outside the borders of the church has been proof not only of the church's failure to care for the least of these among them, but a failure of faith, and often an endangerment of salvation on behalf of the patient. Our brains can be affected by any multitude of factors, from the chemicals in the ooze not absorbing properly to the sun going down an hour early. Our minds and our hearts on these emotional and mental levels are all composites of what has happened to us and to our parents and grandparents and our population subsets. With a good amount of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors becoming so habitual that only serious and direct intervention can steer them in a new way. On a communal level, we are social creatures who seek out connection with each other, yet can be deeply wounded by instances of that same connection. Yet the church's stance toward mental illness, making it a burden for the patient themselves to unravel through proper devotion, rejects all of these facts about ourselves. The church's most common framework for mental illness has been to categorize it as a form of sin. What if, in fact, the church's desire to make mental illness a problem of the individual's faith, rather than to recognize it as a medical condition requiring treatment and as a potential symptom of a sick society? What if that's a sin?